Blog Talk Radio.
What up? What's going on, family? Before we get too far into it, I'm going to do something that really has never worked, but I'm going to do it anyhow because that's just how I freaking feel, and it's a good thing to do, to be honest with you. Good morning, Sister Rashi. What's happening? What's the word? What's the word?
Is that the thing that never worked?
It's the thing maybe that never worked, but, you know. Look, it's going to be the whole like the cone of silence type situation. You know what I'm saying? I got to call somebody through the show. It's really never worked, but I'm gonna try it anyhow, just because it's the appropriate thing to do. Because today I want to really give thanks. That's the word of the day. I want to give thanks. Let me see something. Let's see if this is going to work.
The mailbox belonging to 4437913.
Yeah. See? Yeah. He on that bullcrap today. Well,
it'd be them foreign numbers. It'd be them foreign numbers. They don't know what to do with that.
Look, I was reading.
When the last time
God,
you answered a number you didn't recognize?
That's actually a concern of mine
because it took me a long time to get a cell phone, and because I would see cell phone behavior. That's when somebody call you, and you look, they look at the phone, and they just put the phone down.
Right.
Huh?
Right. But Rashi,
you pay money for instant access.
Rashi. I was trying to say, today is Kanai Perry's birthday, and I was reaching out to the guy because he posted something on Facebook the other day about a conversation he was having with one of his clients. And Kennard is a barber, but you know, your barbers and your beauticians in our community serve too as your psychiatrists and whatnot and your social workers. So. He posted something about a conversation he had with one of his clients and just how much it moved him. But in general, I wanted to say thanks to all of those in that profession for what they do, because, again, they do often serve as your social worker / psychiatrist or sociologist. So, you know, and sometimes that stuff can weigh heavy upon them. So with the day being his born day, I was going to reach out to him and say happy born day to him. I've already called him this morning and all that jazz and did all that, but I was going to sneak it in too while we were on air and give him a big shout out like that. So, you know, happy birthday, God, for real. You know what I'm saying? Keep doing that work. Keep putting in that work and keep lifting people up and giving them the ear to lean on, because, you know, you never know that you may be that last line of defense or hope for them as they go through life. So, you know, definitely I appreciate everything you do day in and day out, God, for real. So show enough. So, you know, enjoy your born day. So that's what I was going after that. You know what I'm saying? Something a little different. You know, but other than that, the mask are coming back. Now, it's ill because I want to say at the beginning of this month, maybe the beginning of last month, I went to New York and I did a little bit of shopping, and part of the shopping was I bought a lot of masks and whatnot. So I'm like, well, I don't really have a place to sell them because I wanted to make a couple dollars. I didn't have a place to really sell them, but one of my homegirls, she has a nail salon, so I gave them to her and said, yo, let me put them over here on consignment, and you know, she sold some for me. But for a minute, none of them sold. She was like, no, ain't nobody trying to buy no masks. No, trust me, there'll be more demand in a minute. So it's sad that I predicted that, but it is what it is, because people won't listen. This damn Delta variant, and there's another variant that was found in Florida just yesterday. I saw the news about that just yesterday. Yo, look, this is a living, breathing, well, it's a germs. I don't know if it has a conscious or not or anything like that, but it's an organism that is trying to survive. It's going to mutate and do whatever it needs to do in order to survive, just like you would do. So, it's changing the game. It's changing around. It's doing the whoop-de-whoop, the loop-de-loop, trying to find hosts and anything and everything in order for it to survive. What more is it supposed to do? So masks are going to come back. We're going to have another shutdown. It's just going to be. Why? Why are we going through this? Because people won't freaking listen. Because people won't listen. I ain't getting that shot. I don't know what's in that thing. Oh, I know three people that died because they got. Didn't nobody damn die because, well, that's not true. Very few people died because they got the damn shot. Like, come on, dog. You know, most people who have passed is because they had other health issues. There is no disease in the damn shot. It was never designed to do that. You know, take the damn shot. You know, yes, you can get the shot and still get the coronavirus. Yes, you can. But if you get the coronavirus after having the shot, you're going to have a lesser degree of the symptoms, and you will have a faster repair or recuperation time. You out here going all willy-nilly and smiling and laughing and coughing and breathing in people's faces, so now folks are finding out that even if you're vaccinated, you can still carry the variant, but you may not get sick at all. But you could pass it on to someone who's not vaccinated, and they'll get sick as a dog. Like, man, look, it's just too much. It's too much, yo, for real. Like, get out here, get your vaccination, and keep it moving. Real talk. That's some real talk. Like, get out here, get your vaccination, and keep it moving. They putting these babies back in school this year. That's what they're talking about. You know, stores are gearing up. You go to the Walmart, you go to the Costco, they got the sets. You know what I'm saying? When the khaki pants and the blue shirts start coming out, you know it's back to school time. you know, the trapper keepers. They even use trapper keepers, Rashi, because you're in the classroom right now. They still got trapper keepers. They got the trapper keepers.
I mean, you can't show up with all kind of crap, but, you know, at this point, we cater to the poorest of the poor. You can show up with a trapper keeper if you want to, but you're going to shove this state-issued government spiral in there. You know what I'm saying? Because we done making poor kids disinterested in education because they don't have the accoutrement, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, the marble notebooks are coming back. I love those things. They jerk.
Well, they didn't attenuate the vaccine so the babies can take it now. So they offered it yesterday at my son's school, back-to-school rally. They offered the vaccine for the kids and a chance for them to get it right again right before they come back into the classroom, you know?
Oh, wow.
And so they're trying their best, you know, because they understand that we have had generational failing of education in our city. So if we send the baby home with mama, the child regresses. The only child that wouldn't regress would be the kindergartner up to second grade. Everybody else regressed from being at home with mama. Mm.
I'm saying, and I'm agreeing with you, but I'm also saying, So I just turned on Facebook, and Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson posted something that says, science is not the truth. Science is finding the truth. When science changes its opinion, it didn't lie to you. It learned more. And, you know, folk are running around screaming that, you know, the mixed messages coming from the CDC. Look, again. CDC wouldn't have changed the damn message. Y'all went out here and got the damn vaccination. And more of y'all would have been vaccinated than not. Then we could have had herd immunity. So it wasn't going to happen just because 10 people got inoculated and then the other 999,000 of us did not. It does not work that way, dog. It does not work that way. More of us had to get involved. Half of the U.S. population before this thing came along, this variant came along, was inoculated. Half. Half is not enough. Half is not a herd. Greater than half is a herd. That provides protection to the rest.
They don't have, like, if you actually got COVID and survived, what do they say to you?
What do you mean? You can get it again.
What? You can get it again. If you had COVID.
It may not be as severe, but you can get it again. But it may not be as severe. Because, you know, you have the antibodies at that point. So, I mean, you can still get it again. You probably won't get sick, but you can still contract the disease again. Yeah.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
But I'm saying how much of this is – I just need to more numbers on. People who already got COVID and came out on the other side, you know, and whether or not they should be trying to seek out vaccination or should they trust their own actual human immunity. They got it. They came out on the other side, you know.
More people survived than died, you know.
Right.
The infection rate versus the death rate, totally two different numbers.
Right. It's morbidity versus mortality. That's right.
Right. When I got my inoculation, actually, my vaccination, the brother that was there with me, he was a Marine, and he had just gotten cleared to get his vaccination because he had COVID. So he decided to get the shot. And, he was telling me, he was like, bro, I'm being real with you. I wouldn't wish this thing on nobody. Nobody. This thing came along. It hit me, and it took me out. I mean, I was straight wiped out. So, you know, I talked to my doctor, and they cleared me. And I asked them, I said, you know, when can I get the shot? And they said, well, you have to wait X amount of weeks. And, bruh, I made that appointment for said day. As soon as that day came, that's why I'm standing here right here with you right now. I popped my ass on that. Never want to go through that again. Never want to go through that again. You know. But look, man, reports coming out, again, Florida, reports coming out of Florida, patients down there on their deathbed.
I mean, this thing that mutated five times. We have Delta, Lambda, Gamma, okay?
Mm-hmm. At least five times.
We got at least five. Okay, so now you want one shot for five evolutionary variations of a virus. That don't seem weird.
It does. And the makers of the shot are pushing for a booster. The healthcare professionals are saying that they're not seeing where a booster is necessary as of now. But again, you know, that's the science right now. The science may
if nothing else
changes.
But one that entails the new genetic variation code, right?
Mm-hmm.
The new part of the virus that was under the Delta, that's not like Gamma, that's not like, I guess, I don't know, Alpha. I don't know what we call regular COVID. Is that Alpha? Anyway, so what's changing? Is it what in this, you know, they not sharing enough to make us want to get buy-in. Can you hear what I'm saying? They're just saying
no. I can't because again, the sharing enough for me was the damn death toll. So I don't get that. I mean, what hell? What more do you want? What more do you want? How many more bodies do you need to see?
Hey, one of the things people are asking for is an origin story. We need a true origin story. Because trying to fight this thing, because
Stop. Why do you need all that? Did you need an origin story for polio? Did you need an origin story for syphilis? Did you need an origin story for yellow fever? Did you need an origin story for the chickenpox? Did you need an origin story for malaria or yellow fever or any other damn inoculation that you had to take in order to go to public school? Did you need an origin story for those? So
I would have preferred my adult. Somebody would have asked for it in the history of mankind. Somebody asked. They said, what are we doing here? What parts, what are you doing? Did you cook it? What are you doing here? How do we take this? What's in it? It should be a legit question. What's in it? And where did it come from? And why do you feel like those are legit questions to me to ask somebody that they're asking me to introduce foreign particles into my body willingly? Now, if you're going to give me the option to avoid contact with other humans who might have it, I love that. I love the stay-at-home orders. I love all that. But making me take... I mean, there's people who haven't been smallpox and measles and polio shotted because they don't trust the information that's been provided as far as the origin, as far as what's in the shot, what are the associated issues with the shots. And I am not an anti-vaxxer. My children and I are both vaccinated, you know, up until recent new shit. But, like, my kids haven't had the, what's that? HPV shots.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You understand? But they have had chickenpox shots. Because they never saw nobody with chickenpox. So I was like, just give them the chickenpox. So I don't have to deal with a 30-year-old man with chickenpox going sterile.
And shingles and all that type of jazz. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So... Yep. You know, but all that information has been gathered over time with scientific inquiry, right? And in my opinion, just that's my regular old street nigga ass opinion, all right?
Mm.
I'm just waiting for the information to be shared with us in a way that we could build confidence in the science like we did. And, you know, hormone replacement therapy and cancer treatment therapy. When you first told a patient, I'm going to try to slowly kill you but I'm going to hope to get the cancer first. They probably was like, what the hell are you talking about? You're going to kill me? I'm going to slowly poison you, but I'm going to just take you to the brink of death until it ain't nothing left for cancer to suck on. And then we're going to scoop that out, you know, and get it on up out of there, and you'll be fine. I mean, you know, we don't kill you. But it was after, mm-hmm. I don't know, 100,000 people survived the technique, right? Intense mm-hmm. radiation. You couldn't have told anybody 100 years ago, I'm going to shoot these radiation waves into your head. You'll be better after that.
You'll be better. Did it save your life?
I'll be who? This is the same radiation that killed Marie Curie, right? Yeah. Okay. But the time that it takes for us to grow familiar with science, with scientific breakthroughs, it just, I mean, yeah, I understand the frustration. I understand why people are angry that folks don't just accept science the way it is, right? Like Neil deGrasse Tyson said, accept that mm-hmm. it is an evolving thing and buy into it where it's at. If it's there now, then buy in. When it grows and develops and evolves, buy into that, right? Going to show you how it grew, how it developed, how it decided this was wrong, this was right. In my opinion, Lee, not enough information is being given to the public about, one, virus evolution, period, of all these viruses we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not this virus is what its comorbidity is, because while we acting like COVID-19 is bossing these streets, the HIV virus been running rain on this planet for quite a while. The influenza virus, hundreds of thousands of years before that. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So what we need to start discussing not is, in my opinion now, again, as a regular-ass, dumb-ass nigga, right? Not what each individual viral character. We need to start addressing our relationship to microorganisms, even down to this new super fungus, right? Down to the fact that we have no cure for the virus. We still don't have one. All mm-hmm. the COVID-19 is giving you pieces of, is giving yourself the virus intentionally. It's not a cure for the virus.
It's not giving you the virus because there's no virus in the injections. What
it's
supposed
giving
to be
you
is
the
protein.
Particles and the microparticles that the virus is comprised of so that you can have a reaction to components of the virus without an enlivened, complete viron. Am I correct?
This is supposed to be the protein blocker so that they're not able to grab onto one another. So that's what the injection is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be like others where, you know, in the past it was, as you were saying, it's the actual virus in another form and it gives you a low dose so that the body can then fight it. This the injections are supposed to be again protein inhibitors or blockers so that they don't form onto your cells. They have nothing to really latch onto. So that's what the COVID shots are supposed to be, and which is one of the reasons that they didn't go through the FDA for approval. They went through just the emergency use.
Here's the other thing a lot of people are arguing about. Now, we calling it COVID, but it's actually mm-hmm. SARS, right? While we only discussing a branch on a, on an actual tree of virons, why are we not talking about the whole tree? And if we start discussing the whole tree, Then we see our president, you know, I mean, ex, you know, old 45 that was trying to say that where the origin story is. So while we up here asking how we going to take care of this, if it's created somewhere where they have already been working on the science, why is the whole rest of the world trying to worry about how to fix something that other people have been sitting in a laboratory working on for since they just found SARS more than 10 years ago? The Chinese people have been dealing with SARS-related complications for more than 15 years.
Right.
Why are we all out here looking now? Is it because they got, you know, I want us to be truthful about stuff. I think if folks got truth to the matter, some people who just want the truth would be like, oh, that's what happened? Okay, let's do this. Like, I think if you told people this was a viral attack by another country trying to do something to our population, folks would be like, what? Okay. If you told people that this was a government experiment trying to see if we can deal with, you know, we're going to COVID virus, but in time we're going to start trying to make ourselves immune to global virus issues one shot at a time. Like, this is our first introduction. Well, technically, I think our second. Yeah, I think it's the polio is a virus too. So, and our smallpox is as well. So this is an addition to our antiviral ammunition. We're trying to build our, chunk it down one viron family at a time until we don't die from retroviruses and all that other stuff, right? I can hear that. You tell me that once a year I need to come get my antiviral shot, right? It's the flu, it's SARS, right? It's smallpox. It's HIV.
Right? Ain't got no shot for HIV yet.
But that's it, and exactly too. How we got it? How was we able to develop all this shit for COVID?
There's more money. Because there's more money in the disease than it is in the cure.
It don't kill us fast enough. This is one of the. Can you see that right. Even that jumping a whole pandemic virus to latch on to the next one to me was fishy. Oh, we can deal with polio. We can deal with smallpox. We can't do nothing about AIDS. We can do something with COVID though. Huh? Huh? No, Lee, you don't hear me?
Again, there's not a vaccination against COVID. You can still get COVID. Even if you're vaccinated, you can still get COVID.
Something about it. There was a global rallying cry to do something about this damn virus, and something got done. On a global, not no country, on a global scale.
Right. But that goes back to what we were talking about last week, though. It goes back to economics. So it was a global scale because you're threatening the workforce, i.e. you're threatening people's ability to make money. If you're threatening the workforce, which the coronavirus was, you're threatening the labor market. You're threatening the labor market. That affects and impacts the stock market. That affects and impacts anything and everything, the real estate market, anything and everything market-wise. So, yeah, there had to be a quick check on this thing, because if not, then countries would have gone broke. Literally and figuratively. And ain't nobody out here trying to go broke. Nobody. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's be honest. Folks in power, folks with money, are trying to stay in power and with money. So ain't nobody trying to go broke. So something had to be done in order to keep the peons out there still pushing pencils and pens or moving freight or selling goods and services, and you know what I'm saying? Something had to be done in order to slow the spread of this fear, absolutely fear, and spread of the damn disease. So that's why this thing was so was agreed upon so quickly and acted upon so swiftly. Because, again, you had thousands upon thousands upon hundreds of thousands of people dying quickly. There's already a warning about the birth rate throughout the world. It's getting so bad where it's just not Japan at this point. America has a problem with its birth rate. People ain't having babies. Folks are turning to one another. That does not lend for baby making when, you know, you have these same sex unions. There's a concern with that, again, not only in Asia, but right here, smack dab dab in America. Pretty sure the same is true in Europe. And it's not just for the same sex couples. Let me be clear on that before y'all start freaking emailing me and banging me over the head. No, it's because, you know, people are trying to figure out a way to survive. And it's getting tougher and tougher for anybody to survive in this economy, this worldwide economy that we're going through. Things are expensive as hell, and the money just isn't there. You all know I've been championing and blowing the horn for months about wage increases and making sure that folks are paid properly. There was an article posted, I think I posted yesterday, I can't remember exactly what day it was written, but it was like, you know, we don't have a labor shortage, we have a salary shortage. You know, I spoke to that, what, 2-3 weeks ago? You know, folk at the top are making 200-399% more than the folk at the bottom. How does that work? How does that work? You're literally out here making this thing go. You are the fuel, the piston, whatever, to the damn engine. But you're making 299% less than the individual at the top that's just taking phone calls. That's all they're doing. They're taking phone calls. Taking phone calls, having meetings about the shit that you're doing. They're talking about what you're actually physically doing. But they make 200-399% more than what you make. How does that work? So no, why would you go out here and offer up child and child, child after child after child after child? For what? Hell, you're just trying to survive. Family of six? Is this damn time? Man, come on. What y'all doing? How y'all getting on that?
A family of six is a beautiful thing in agricultural days.
You know,
family of six. When you get out when them babies get out from school, you can plow a good acre a day with family of six.
Look at him. We ain't living in Supply, North Carolina. We ain't doing stuff like that. Oh, what's going on, brother?
How you doing, man?
Who's down in Supply?
Hey, Brother Rodney, how you doing?
What's going on, Sister Raji, Brother Lee? I hear him saying that he wish he was living in Supply, North Carolina.
Supply.
And I just wanted to say, right on, brother, the world would be a better place if we was living in Supply, North Carolina.
Look. Speaking of the South, we got Angela on today. Now, she's giving us sloppy 23rds because she done gone on all kinds of TVs and shows and said that she's running for the Senate. Well, you know, we had backdoor conversations about this months and months and months ago. Bro, I'm going to do it. I'm like, for real? I said, all right, well, look, let's do it. Let's make the official announcement on the show. Oh, yeah, I got you. So she goes on. And I'm like, yo, you ready? She's like, nah, because I got to do this. Okay, that's cool. And I'm like, okay. So you, I'm ready in 2 weeks. All right, no problem. 2 weeks go by. Yo, you ready? Yeah. Look, I'm going to do this real quick. I'm going to call you. 3 months later. Good morning, Angela. How you doing, sis?
Really? That's how you gonna treat me?
That's how I'm gonna treat you.
That's really how you gonna do me.
That's
where is
I'm
the
bring
love
you on
at this morning? Where
the,
is the love?
The love.
Good morning,
everyone. As I get sloppy 23rd, that's the love. That's the love right there.
You only
the
have
love
yourself
right
to blame.
The love is right here, Senator Jeter. And I just need you to remember how important it is for black women to step in and fix things. I have yet to see a process that is not improved by the workings of black women. I have yet to see it. And so when you include women like yourself, Senator Jeter, even some of that crazy foolishness happening on the Senate floor can get resolved, you know?
I agree with you totally.
So you down in South Carolina, you decided to take on your boy Tim Scott. Oh, Lord have mercy. Let me tell you about this boy here. This boy is nervous. He's all on national TV trying to talk a good talk. And, you know, did he wheel his mama and them out yet? Because he
did bring out mama.
All
he
over.
Did.
He got mama and them on the TV. See, you ain't never seen mama and them. Now he got mama and them on the TV. He nervous, and he should be. What has he done for the people of South Carolina? What has he done?
Nothing that I can see.
That's the answer right there. That's what I'm talking about. All right, so.
Nothing I can see.
So, Senator Jeter, you're up against a gentleman who, is he the one who stood and said that there was no racism in America? Am I right?
Oh, no.
That is absolutely correct. That is what
now
he said.
Now you tried to get my heartburn back.
He actually stated that he did not define the characters of racism or any of that other. He explained to everyone that for not just for South Carolina, but that in the entirety of the union, there is no racism to be found. And this is a politician who stood in front of media and said this. Is this correct, Senator Jeter?
That is absolutely correct, and then counted the number of times he was profiled.
So have you picked out drapes for the senator the dining room yet? Because I think you should go with that coral orange. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, that is absolutely what.
How you going to say there's no racism and then count the number of times your ass was profiled? See, he's special. Just give him a hug. When you see him, just give him a hug.
Yeah.
Give him a hug.
Bless his heart.
Pat him on the back. Say, bless your heart, baby. Just bless your heart. I knew your mama and then. But anyhow, so how's it going? How's the campaign going?
Well, it is going well. We did actually announce back in May. And we have just been, from there, we have just been moving full speed ahead. We have been in person as well as on Zoom, depending upon how the occasion has called for it, speaking with the citizens of South Carolina, making sure that what we're talking about, what we're focusing on, is what needs to be focused on in their eyes. And that has gone incredibly well. We've gotten a lot of positive feedback. And we are focused now. We turn our attentions now that we feel like we have our messaging where it needs to be, where we're trying to do something that we know Democrats are not known for, and that's actually having a message. We intentionally focus on having just such a message, because really and truthfully, I think when it comes down to it, we just had an incredible election in 2020 with Jamie Harrison raising $132 million, the most, I think, to date of any senator. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. even though he raised all that money, he didn't win. In fact, mm. he didn't even move the needle compared to the person that ran a previous Senate race with only $500,000. I think that says a lot about where people are and what they're looking for. So we were very intentional. Not only did we specify our priority areas, which we pinpointed down to three things that we felt like were headings that so many things went under, economic development, infrastructure, education, but we also released how I would be making my decisions in regards to those specific items. So it's not just a, this is what it is, but we're actually using a governing stance where I'll look at the moral imperative to govern, fiscal reasonableness, and federalism. So we're actually giving you some insight into how I'll be making those decisions once I become senator.
Well,
and that has been making a difference.
You know, education is always a hot button topic for any district, you know, and with South Carolina being South Carolina, unfortunately, being ranked amongst the bottom of the other 50 states, how do you envision turning that tide around? Like, is it a focus on primary education or secondary education that you want to really drill down and bring to the great folks of South Carolina?
I think it has to be a focus on both. We know that in order to be able to provide the work, the future workforce, as well as the present workforce, we got to be able to educate individuals to a point where they can read, they can write, they can do basic math and sciences. Those are things we know that we have to do, because as in a lot of states, including South Carolina, we've seen a resurgence of manufacturing, but a different type of manufacturing. It's not just people going in and being on assembly lines. Now we're having something they call mechatronics coming into play, where people are having to, the machines are doing the work, but they got to have somebody to fix the machines, to program the machines, to maintain the machines. So it's changing the way manufacturing is being done. But you're going to have to be able to read the plans. You're going to have to be able to understand how to do the maintenance, how to take those machines apart. So that part is encompassing of both the K through 12 education as well as the post-secondary education.
You know how important education is, one of those things, Senator Angela, that if you put the money in, you do get to see the benefits, you know, of rain down on society. It, unlike some things like bailing out banks and stuff, like when you educate people, you get them, one, like me and Lee were talking about earlier, better invested in scientific breakthrough, and more willing to buy in to the things that have to happen within a society to keep it propelling forward. You know what I'm saying? And so I just want to let you know that putting education on your, you can't fail. Like, you really cannot fail by educating the people. It is truly our power, the more we know. And so when you talk about things like free community college education, especially if you're passing the classes, when you talk about things like having more, what they call those, Senator Geter, enterprise zones, or something where you can work in that industry and get loan forgiveness. I don't know the exact term, but you know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about, although a lot of those dollars have been snatched back from the previous administration. They discontinued a lot of those programs.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, you get the idea. Those ideas of educating and buying back into the people, giving those high school students at least 2 more years of education free, things like that, it makes all the difference in, like, what kind of society. It can only be so many mechanics, you know. There can only be so many nannies and sous chefs. Some of us have to be heart surgeons, and, you know, and when you educate from like 2 years old, having a head start, invested in Head Start even, right? Senator Jeter has shown to be an invaluable source of fountain of being able to better a society within a fairly short term. I'm talking about 10 years. You can see grades from the fifth grader from what you did in Head Start. And so I really appreciate you putting that money back into the people, because without it, I mean, you can make it if you pander to corporate America. You really can make it. But what is it, right?
Right. Well, you know, that has been my focus, even from the things that I've been involved in the community, being on a credit union board here in Spartanburg, South Carolina, that we focus on financial literacy as well. So we are one of the few credit unions, actually I think we're the only credit union in the area that has taken the initiative to put branches inside of economically disadvantaged schools. So those schools where we are the minority, the majority, and we are trying to teach at a very early age the importance of understanding your finances. We're also doing the same thing in the Hispanic community, teaching them. You know, we, in every branch in our credit union, we have a bilingual person in every single branch, to make sure that when those individuals show up, that we can communicate and connect with them in the manner that they are used to being connected with. So that, for me, education was how I got out. I mean, I wasn't raised with a silver spoon in my mouth, and that was my avenue to better where I came from, was to be a part of education. That was what my mother said from a very young age, that is going to be your ticket out. And for me, it was. Now, that doesn't go to say that everybody's got to have a 4-year degree or a 12-year degree or whatever your focus is, but you got to have some education about whatever you're doing, whether that's a 2-year degree, whether that's entrepreneurship. You got to know how to get your books. You got to know what things you need to be in, to put in place in order for your business to be successful. So it doesn't matter. There's always an opportunity for education, and that's what makes it so important.
Mm. Rodney, you want to get in?
Yes. Good morning, Senator B. It is so good to hear that nice Southern accent, taking me right back home. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking there should be some, like, biscuits in the oven right now, you know, ready for some. And Lee, I know you don't know nothing about this, but ready, you know, with a little lard inside of them, you know, to keep it.
Oh,
nice.
Lord, have mercy.
Yes,
you know what I'm
saying? I got a spot for you, Rodney. I got a spot for you.
Okay, Rodney, you know I'm coming to see you.
You hear what she said? She said, I got a spot for you. She didn't say I was cooking. She said, I got a spot for you. You got the wrong one over there. That ain't, no, that ain't going to happen.
Hey, Lee, but see, I know auntie throw down. I know mom or grandma or sister or cousin throw down because they from the Carolinas. See, now you talking home central for me. You talking about where the culinary delights of today were created. Just ask Brother Twiddly. He'll tell you that right there in South Carolina. You know, we eat rice every day almost back in Carolina. And rice is soul food because rice comes from Africa, and it was those African slaves right there in the Carolinas that gave America its first cash crop. So speaking of cash crops,
Geechee women,
Senator, and yes, there needs to be some stewed mullets and some grits on the stove right now so we can have something with those biscuits. But I wanted to get to you a couple of things. And before I get back to education, which I think is hugely important, I would like for you to, and first, big shout out to Jamie Harrison. The brother contacts me on a weekly basis looking for money, and I have donated, but he's right back, so I see how he raised all of that money. But and he ran against the other South Carolina senator, you know, the one that says, what was it? Look at the tape, you know, play back the tape, that guy, the lying dude. But anyway, Jamie Harrison ran against him. And I think the elections are offset there, so they're both not up for Tim Scott and the other lying dude. I don't even like saying his name, Graham. But can you share with the audience why you chose to run now, this particular level of office, and specifically against, I almost slipped and called him a brother, but the fellow that looks like a black man named Tim Scott. Can you share with the folks why you're running against him specifically and not against the lion Lindsey Graham that said,
"Hi, Lindsey,
play the tape"?
Well, really and truthfully, I made this decision a few years ago. I had gotten a little discouraged with some things that I felt that he should have been doing that he wasn't doing. That is Tim Scott. And I kind of wavered with the decision after Jamie came along and he had that massive impact, because I thought for sure, you know, he was going to bring it home. And in December, I started getting all these calls. Hey, remember you said a few years ago you're going to run for this position? I said, well, I don't really know. It doesn't look like South Carolina is ready. Well, then January 6th hit. And that just really, quite frankly, pissed me off, because I thought about my time in service as a veteran. And to watch people attempt to throw the democracy, I mean, literally overthrow the government. And I was like, really? Really? How are we going to do
this? What branch did you serve in?
I was in the Air Force.
Oh, United States Air Force. Thank God. Oh, my mercy. I'd like to say that as much as we can on this show. We'd like to say that as much as we can on this show. Black folks within the United States Air Force, y'all.
Yes, we were. And we are.
Still. My son is.
We don't all go to
right
the
now.
Army.
That is so true. We're not knocking the Army. We love the Army too. But, you know, I'm representing the Air Force. And it just, that happening made me realize that we were at a pivotal moment. Everything that led up to that, everything that's happening after that, shows that we have to stand up for what is really right. And the opportunity to vote and to participate in the process is our right. And to have someone tell me I can't because of the color of my skin, that pissed me off. And to listen to Tim Scott tell me there's no racism, to listen to him hammer and haw when it comes to the Voting Rights Act and the George Floyd Justice Act, that just really said to me, this dude here is so out of touch. He don't even know what the hell going on. And he needs to be removed. And so that ultimately was the tipping point that made me say, yeah, the time is now.
Well, I think South Carolina
is ready to.
So South Carolina may be ready. But I think that there's still an elephant in the room of South Carolina. And that elephant has to do with Jamie Harrison ran against Lindsey Graham, a white man. Now you're running against a black man. And there's a narrative, and I think we have to get this out early. There's a narrative that some people might say, well, here come another sister going after, notice I didn't say brother, but going after another black man. Why didn't she run against Lindsey Graham? Why, again, we got to check our six, and it's a sister that we got to look out for. Can you please address that so we can get rid of the elephant?
Yeah, I do fear, unfortunately, we are in the South, and that is something that will most absolutely come about. But here's what I need people to remember. This position belongs to the people of South Carolina. It doesn't belong to any one person, irregardless of their ethnicity. But it just so happens that there is a person of color sitting in that seat, but that person is not representing us nor the citizens of South Carolina to the degree that will allow us to continue to progress and move forward from a financial perspective, from an educational perspective, nor from an infrastructure perspective.
Okay, so thank you for that. Now I want to go back to education. Excuse me. Because when we talk about education, we tend to talk about it in dollars and cents. And Rashi said it, you know, you throw money at it and you get results. Well, I come from a school district that's the largest school district in the nation and has one of the highest per pupil expenditures and has some of the lowest African-American male graduation rates. So money by itself does not change the outcomes of students in general and especially black students. As a matter of fact, when it comes down to the indicators of what brings about successful outcomes, student success in school and then in life has little to do with money. It usually has something to do with the curriculum and the rigor associated with that curriculum and the teachers. But the number one indicator is the family life of those students. And so where my point is leading to is when the research is done, it always points back to the home. And what I would like to know is whatever money that there is, here in Vegas, we did something called what should a 12th grader look like? In other words, what should they be equipped with? Knowledge, what skill set, what's in their toolkit, so to speak, right? And then whatever that is that the community says they should be equipped with to get jobs, create businesses, to just function in life as well as to function in government, which is key, as we see from 1-6 and the mis- and disinformation that's out there. Have you all thought about doing an assessment of what a 12th grader should look like in South Carolina? And then once you've determined that, let that be your guide on the funding versus just throwing money at it in general?
Well, I can say that specific model we have not looked at, but that's absolutely something that we can and will look at it. But I agree with you that it does come back to the home, which is why I think infrastructure is so key. Everybody, when they think infrastructure, they think about roads, bridges, and that sort of thing. They forget about the quality of life component to infrastructure. That's the hard infrastructure, the roads, the bridges, the tunnels, the water, all of that. There's a soft component to infrastructure. And that has to do with the quality of life. That has to do with the educational opportunities. That has to do with health care. That has to do with access to capital. That has to do with the growth of the community in general, those investments in innovation and technology. making sure that the family unit itself has the capacity to flourish and grow. Because we know how you're brought up and what you get exposed to has an enormous impact on where you end up going. So I think you got to start even earlier and look at what environment the kids are raised in and what they're being exposed to, because I think that's going to help them develop their goals, their visions, their dreams, their aspirations. So I absolutely agree that those things need to be looked at as well.
I have one final thought on that, if I may.
Go ahead, Ron.
Again, we talk about education and we talk about degrees and things like that, or certificate programs. And you all mentioned the Air Force earlier. There was a projection some years ago, not that many years ago, but within the last 20 years, that there was going to be a pilot shortage in America. There is a pilot shortage in America today. They said that there was going to be a mechanic shortage in America. And there's a mechanic shortage in America today. I highlighted those two particular items because, one, we associate with a degree, being a pilot, and the other we do not, being a mechanic. Well, the pilots make over $100,000 a year, and the mechanics, which is what I was in the Air Force, as a civilian, I pull in about $85,000 without overtime and almost starting out as a mechanic for aircraft. And it only requires a certification and on-the-job training. So I mentioned those things once again as not only is our economy changing, and we're going to see even more changes due to COVID-19 Trump virus, but we know that AI, robotics, things like that are changing the workforce. We know we've lost 40% of our retail jobs, with an expected 40% more to happen in less than half the time. They have automated burger flippers at McDonald's now. So even some of those basic jobs are no longer valid. In Vegas, they have bartenders are being replaced with machines. So those types of jobs are leaving. So again, when we talk about education, secondary, post-secondary, and we're looking at those children, are we looking at the things that are in the future as well as for our immediate needs to make sure that specifically our children are able to provide for their families in the very expensive housing market that's starting to roar across the country? Are we looking at those medical jobs that, because we're getting older, we need to have people in those fields? Because if you have a bunch of people in a field and there's no work for them, they just incurred a whole bunch of debt, and now they're driving Lyft and Uber. So I wanted you to address where are we and how are we going to ensure that our children are properly educated for the today's workforce as far as the future workforce. And also, we saw at 1-6, I talked about it earlier, that misinformation and disinformation, our form of government requires an educated electorate on how our government works. Are our schools doing enough to ensure that we're producing people who understand their role in government?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think our schools are doing enough. And I think that is a compound and complex issue. But I think it starts with who's teaching our kids. We know that the standard for a teacher has been reduced and reduced and reduced because the number of people going to the teaching profession has been down, 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 and continues to plummet. A lot of that goes back to how do they sustain a living. So I think we have to look at, and from the federal level, we don't really get into the curriculum piece that is more of a state directive. But I think what you do is, well, you work with the state as they are establishing what the curriculum should look like, when they're establishing the pay for the teachers, when they're establishing the requirements for the people that are teaching the future generations. I think you also have to be cognizant of the fact of where we are going as a society, those green jobs that are popping up. We have to be absolutely aware of the clean initiatives and how they're going to impact the way manufacturers or anybody else does business. And that means that we do have to take a look at how and what we're preparing our students to do. You know, and I talk about the reason why I think that exposure piece is so important. Because it is hard to imagine what life is like if you can't see a mechanic, if you can't
right.
see a teacher and see them being prosperous in the thing and happy in what their quality of life looks like. So I think there has to be a exposure piece to it. You know, as an auntie, you know, my niece just went to space school. She's 12. She had mm-hmm. a phenomenal time at space school down in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Those things that her young mind is being exposed to allows her to envision that she wants to be a geneticist, that she wants to be a part of the space program. But it had to be an exposure piece. We have to allow our kids to be able to dream. That's how I determined what I wanted to be. I saw all this stuff, and I thought, well, this is cool and that is cool. Even as a poor child growing up, my mother made sure that I was able to dream. And I think a lot of times those dreams are being squashed because, unfortunately, the circumstances that kids are being raised in is forcing them to have to grow up faster, which means they're not having time to fulfill dreams and aspirations. That is from a family perspective, because if mom and dad are working 12 jobs to try to put food on the table and keep the lights on, there's not a whole lot of time for them to spend time with that child to help them with their dreams and aspirations. So we do have to look at the living wage, not the minimum wage, but the living wage of what our citizens are making, because that is going to determine their quality of life. And all of that circles back into the educational piece and how and what kids are being exposed to.
And look, earlier I was trying to get this question because I didn't want us to go too far. And I'm being quite serious. I'm not trying to be funny with the question that I'm about to ask when you're talking about infrastructure. Is there still a nice amount of folk whom are off the grid down in South Carolina, meaning
yes.
well water and or, you know, no real, I'm being honest, I'm not trying to be funny, like no real electricity, you know, runs through the homes. Is there still a nice amount of folks that are still living like that? And is that something that you would like to address via a green alternative, or first off, is it even on your radar? And if it is it something that you would like to address via a green alternative, or just other investments with respect to infrastructure? Because again, you know, those things could have an adverse effect on how a child learns, depending on, you know, hell, you can't get the internet if you don't have electricity, and you know. Good, clean, running water is essential to all of our health. So that's why I wanted to ask that question.
That is still a problem. When you here in South Carolina, there are places that adequate, clean drinking water is in short supply. We have schools that are literally about to fall in.
Mm.
We have places that are still lacking in broadband access. They may have the electrical components, but they're restricted in who they can get that electricity from, which means that, we know if there's not any competition there, that can sometimes lead to higher electrical rates. The broadband component makes healthcare a challenge because we see the healthcare component continue to expand into, you know, telehealth and that sort of thing and those technological innovations. We see, unfortunately, a lot of the rural communities no longer have a hospital. They're having to drive 50, 60 miles just to get to a hospital. So, yes, those are all parts of the infrastructure piece that we're looking at. We have to look at the smaller rural communities and figure out how we help them plan, even though they may not have a source, a tax base of revenue because there's no manufacturer there or some huge corporation there. There could be natural resources there that could allow for a tourism or a hospitality aspect. So we do have to assist those smaller communities in planning to be able to use all of the resources at their disposal in order to grow their communities. So it is a multifaceted piece, and that is why infrastructure, we're looking at not just the hard infrastructure, but the soft infrastructure that looks at that quality of life piece, because I think that will make a difference as to whether or not those rural communities die out or that they're able to make a resurgence and progression and a comeback in order to flourish and become a thriving community here in South Carolina.
So, Senator DeBee, I want to go back to that because Lee actually hit on something that I think we could actually use Africa as an example. We constantly hear reports of Akon building a real Wakanda in Africa. And, you know, I'm from those woods that Lee is alluding to because I remember when we didn't have electricity and I remember when they came to cut trees down to run the power lines where I'm from. And so growing up, initially, I had no idea about electricity, light bulbs, didn't know that you could turn a knob, and not only could you get water out of a spigot, but you could also get hot water without having to chop some wood and put it in the heater. I had no idea about that, right? But the interesting thing is we tend to look at improving those people's lifestyles by doing it in the old way. In other words, cutting more trees down, building power lines above ground that's going to be knocked down by the tornadoes and hurricanes when they come through, that's going to cause power disruptions. We tell them that they need to have city water or county water, when in reality, the water that they have on their property that they have water rights to, which we don't have as much out west and definitely not in the north. So I guess where I'm going is the powers that be, looking at a modern approach to bringing these services? So, for example, we don't need physical lines, to bring broadband because we can use satellite technology and towers to beam that to people. So you don't need to do as much disruption to people's property. There's not as much eminent domain because when you run power lines, you have to use land from somebody. And if you're going into the folks off the grid, so to speak, you have to take people's land or use other people's land. So I just wanted to know, with solar power, yes, we can give them solar power and they can have electric power. Maybe we can give them a filtration system versus telling them that they have to use city water because we know that city water is under attack by some terrorists in the country as well as out. So are we reimagining how we can bring these services to people, or so far is it just the same old, same old?
Well, no, I agree with you, and I think that's where it is. We have to equip the communities themselves with the tools that they need to look at how they are set up. Think it's our place from a federal level or from a state level for that matter to tell a community how they should look. But the community has to have the tools that they need to be able to assess how they look. And that's where I think from a federal level, we can be of assistance by connecting them with HUD from a housing perspective to see what initiatives are available to them. Looking at those green proposals to see how can we get the solar farms? What resources do they already have that can help them grow in whatever manner they deem appropriate for their situation? I don't think there's a catch-all type of methodology to this. I think what it is that each community needs to be able to envision for itself what makes it work and what makes it the community that it is. And I think that does go back to the education piece. There are all the city council and the county council and the mayor, are those individuals, do they have the resources to do an assessment of their communities to find out what is going on, what do they need? You know, there are communities that still need roads. I mean, they need to get from their property to downtown if that's what they choose to do. But we also need to look at the demographics that are there, because we know a lot of time in the small town communities, young people, you know, we were in a community, and I asked in the middle part of the state in Newberry, and I asked the question, what do young people do here? Because as we're driving around, I'm like, I don't see any movie theaters. I don't see any bowling alleys. What do young people do around here? You look at the demographics, those young people got out of town. That's what they do. They left. But in a community cannot thrive if there are no families. The retirees cannot forever sustain a community because they're at that end of life stage. They're retiring. They're not working, so they're not contributing as much to the economy. So we have to make sure if those communities are sustainable for the young people that are just getting into their family situation, that don't want the hustle and the bustle of driving 30 minutes to a city job, for them to be able to live in a small-town community, be able to have an engaging experience on a day-to-day basis, and actually be able to provide financially for their families. So
all
I absolutely
right.
think
Thank
a
you.
Modern approach has to be looked at.
Scott is in trouble.
Rashi's quiet. Rashi?
Sorry about that.
Rashi?
I'm thinking about what it takes to like becoming a senator. I remember what we talked about early in the year, accountability, right? When you're a senator, I think you get even more power close to that of a governor, right? Sorry about the background noise. The senator is very close. You know, I guess senator is federal and the governor is state. But it's your turn. Like when something bursts or somebody, it's your turn. It's going to be your turn to legislate and tell people no when they're going to get angry. And I guess I'm worried, Sister Angela, about some of the, you know how angry people are nowadays and whether or not they're ready for, you know, Senator Angela, who's going to be very much like, you know, the AOC. I mean, it's just a new wave of people coming through who are not getting booked. They won't be bullied. They won't be bought. You understand? They can be whatever dirt you did, you ready for them to know, you know? So somebody's not going to be able to come, you know, in 2 or 3 years saying, remember that baby Senator Angela ate? And, you know, what I guess I'm just worried that And I'm not calling you mature or sophisticated, Sister Angela, but do you have the energy to deal with these people? You know what I'm talking about. These people are, they call themselves fact checkers, but they don't look in but one place. They're angry. They're so angry. You know, they hide in a motherfucker, Angela. They out here, they just hide, and they just... They're underpaid with what little check they got. They wouldn't got high with it, and now they mad at you, Angela. You did it, and so they're gonna write and type, and they're just gonna keep sending you these emails, and they're gonna have all these special interest groups in your office, and you just, are you ready? Are you? I mean, because I see it, I see you getting it. I mean, it ain't really like a whole bunch of true brain trust. I'll say no, not her. Him or them, right? You got what right. It takes. You've done the work. So what I want to know is are you ready to get what you asking for? I always worry about people getting what they actually ask for, because they romanticize it so bad when they quest for it, right? And then they're not ever really prepared for that other shoe. Are you ready for us crazy Americans to come in on you? It's not a game, because we're not very much different than those early colonialists, you know? Not much has changed in my opinion, in the mindset of Americans, to where, like, they just tried to kidnap one of y'all. You know, they just tried to kidnap a senator or something and had her and held her. One of them got shot in the head or something, Kathy Gifford or whatever. Do you hear me? I'm not trying to dissuade you. I'm not. You know, I would never do that. What I'm telling you is you're not asking to be head of the PTA. You know, that come right. with its own backbiting. Them old backbiting heifers with all the rumors they spread, right? You're asking to become senator, an African American female senator of a stronghold slave state from back in the day. You understand, with those old Appalachian almost mindsets, you know. Are you not in California? Are you ready to do real battle against your naysayers?
Yes. I don't have a problem with doing battle. I've never shied away from a fight. And I think that is really what this race is going to be about. It is going to be about a willingness to lead and an actual desire to govern. Where we're going right now and where we are is crazy to me. I don't understand how we got here. Now, America has never been perfect, ever, and it never will be perfect. But I didn't think we'd gone this far to the point of, you know, kidnapping people and, you know, showing up and desecrating people's homes and that sort of thing. I think, yes, we are at a heightened state. But I think that is exactly the time when you do need some strong leadership to come in and say, hey, hold on a second. You know, I understand where you are, but you have got to look at the entire situation. I think my background allows me to be able to do that. Being a veteran, being an accounting and finance professional, I've worked in the healthcare. See, I've been in those high stress in the Air Force. I was a medical lab technician. That is very stress, because literally you're holding someone's life in your hand. You give them the wrong blood. You misdiagnose their condition. They get the wrong antibiotics. That person dies. I've been in those situations where it really was life or death. Somebody really was going to die. To me, everything after that, it's okay. You know, I have been there, unfortunately, growing up in the South, unfortunately, however you want to look at it, I've had to deal with that my entire life. So many times I was the only black person in my class. So I've had to grow up in that environment of hostility, being bullied, being, picked on, all those things I've dealt with my entire life. And children are much worse than adults, believe it or not, because they have no filter. There is no point where they're going to end. They're going to be as merciless as possible. And so from an adult standpoint, I think the adults, they'll get in line. You know, I know they're coming, but one thing I've always lived my life by is integrity and accountability. So if you're going to come for me, come on. But you better be ready when you get here, because I will not be easily moved from where I am. So I welcome the challenge and the opportunity for all of those that are exactly where you are. There is nothing about this race that is going to be easy. Tim Scott is middle of the road, doesn't move the needle one way or the other. He will do what he's told. He will stand out there and be the black guy in the crowd. I am not that person. And I think it's time out for that person that is in there now.
Time out. I like that. I like that call out. How's the fundraising going? Because let's talk about the money.
Yeah, now we do have to talk about the money. Now that, I will admit, we haven't focused on that. The fundraising piece, which is one of the things I had, you know, my team had to sit down and had to come to Jesus with me at the beginning of the month. We had to really sit down and look at it. It's like, okay, now we got to get the fundraising part off the ground. So, yes, this quarter we are fundraising our butts off. We are looking at we're on ActBlue, so please feel free to go to ActBlue. Angela Jeter, that's Jeter with a G, like the ball player Derek, but with a G. So we are on ActBlue. You can go to my website, Jeter, G is in Gamma, E is in Echo, T is in Tom, E is in Echo, R is in Rose. JeterForUSSenate.com is the website. Jeter for Senate, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can donate on any one of those mediums. Check us out. Please donate. All amounts are accepted. $5. You can give $5 a month. You can do $5 a week if you want to. No amount is too little. And certainly, you can absolutely donate up to the $2,900. And if you'd like to donate more than that, we can talk about that too. But this campaign has got to amplify. We have an incredible message. I am very appreciative of the team that I have that has worked hard to help me develop my messaging, to help me with my branding. Our tagline is Frontline Leadership. We have an incredible opportunity here. But, yes, I must have the resources. There's no question about it. I must have the volunteers, the financial support. All of you that are listening, please know and understand, it does not matter if you live in South Carolina or not. You can donate. There are no restrictions. And I would appreciate your support.
Now, that's how you campaign for some funds right there. Miss Angela, I just want to thank you as a black woman to black woman. We forever breaking through. We forever got our next thing on the back burner. You know what I'm saying? We're going to civilize this world one event at a time. We're going to get it.
One office at a time, right?
One moment at a time. We're going to get this nation, this globally, we're going to get this planet back to where we had it millions of years ago. And I want to thank you for your time and interest here at Real Radio. I mean, because we have an international audience, you can expect an international response. You understand?
I appreciate that. I appreciate you and the invitation to come.
Oh, well, you know, it's always open for you, ma'am. Always.
And Lee, I hate to call you out, brother, but I ain't got your check yet.
I told you.
Rodney,
it's in the mail.
I ain't got your check
it's
yet.
In the mail. It's in the mail. You know, the postal service running behind.
Donate online, people. Donate online.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Oh, whatever. I'm a cash happy. Well, look. Thank you, sis. But definitely drop the campaign page so people can find you as far as your online presence, and we'll transition out after that.
Okay. Jeter, G as in Gamma, E as in Echo, T as in Tom, E as in Echo, R as in Rose. Jeter, 4, F-O-R-U-S, Senate.com.
Awesome,
we are Jeter
awesome.
For Senate on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Jeter for Senate. Gotcha. Well, thank you for your time.
Jeter for USSenate.com.
Jeter for USSenate.com. I apologize. We'll keep up with you, and definitely look for my check. It's in the mail. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, peace. You got it. Look, so the Olympics have been going on this week. I want to hit that quickly because Rodney isn't so enthused about having this conversation, and it's okay. Simone Biles pulled out of the individual competition and the team competition. Now, the young lady is citing her mental health. We started off with this point when I went to reach out to talk to Kennard. You know, she's not being scored fairly, according to her. That's her feeling, right? The judges have made it pretty much known that they are not trying to encourage other people to take or make the moves that she's making because they don't think that they can keep up. That's really it. So, you know, here this young lady is going out here doing her thing, and in a lot of ways, it's much to do about nothing or all for naught, to be honest with you. How do you keep your motivation high or your mind right when you know that you're about to go out here and put on your best, but your best is not going to get graded at what it's supposed to be? I don't see it. I understand. I applaud her for taking her stance. And, you know, to me, it goes back to the shut up and dribble comments that LeBron James got. You know, yes, I'm an athlete. Yes, I'm a performer, but I have a life too. I have a mind too. I have a soul too. And I have to make sure that I'm taken care of. You know, so I'm happy that she did this. Now, you could say she pulled out after she had a piss poor performance grading wise. Maybe she felt like a sore loser, blah, blah, boom. I saw some videos of her where her timing was off. She had said that, you know, she just doesn't feel all together there. I don't know what that's about. If I was being messy, I would say she might be pregnant, you know. And I say that because her and her boyfriend have gotten really hot and heavy, and this she very well may be. You know what I'm saying? I'm pretty sure they've given her a test or two, but they're not going to announce that she's pregnant right now. That's just not going to happen. So I don't know, man. I'm curious to see what the next page in her book is going to be, because she is still the GOAT when it comes to gymnastics. But is she going to further slide back and step off and come out of the limelight, or is she going to get back, get her wits back about her and push on? You know, I wish her the best either way, though, to be honest.
Well, I mean, I think you have to remember that this young lady has had a really hard life above and beyond the Olympics. She's an adoptee. She lives in an all-white family. She's had some troubles going on. Please forgive me. According to, I guess somebody decided to turn a 808 on 100.
No, you fine.
So what we're talking about is a young lady who This right here is not her only thing. It's not her first thing. It's not her only thing. Okay? So when we start talking about, is the Olympics her life? No. She's got, like you said, a boyfriend and also a brother that has got some personal issues going on. Is that right?
I'm not sure about that. I didn't think it's
going
on.
Yeah, there's some stuff going on with Simone Biles' family. Okay? So when we're not just talking about a two-year-old girl who just all her life has been gymnastics and everything. When I looked at the interview about Simone, it took gymnastics to get her just to be able to join. She was already jumping off of shit. You understand?
Mm.
This is ridiculous. They had to route her into gymnastics before she jumped off the roof again.
Right.
She has emotional and mental issues that she has discussed openly in a public forum, you know, in the media. So we need to talk about her like that, not like some doll that just gets pulled out for the Olympics.
Right.
As good as she is, she's not just for the Olympics. She has a whole reality. And now, I think it's her brother. Yeah, like her older brother or her little brother.
He was acquitted of murder charges from 2018 shooting.
Okay, you hear me? That's recent. That was worth some training she missed to show up at some court dates and stuff, okay? You have to, and that's her only, you know, legitimate blood. Everybody else is white, the white foster family or whatever. You have to hear when people tell you, I got you, but I too am struggling. I too am dealing with something. While I'm trying to deal with what you want me to do, I'm also dealing with my personal life. Once you achieve something in the mindset of America for us, once you become an American icon, you're ours. Whatever's going on, you have to conform to what we feel like. You can't get high no more. If you're a lady, you can't even get pregnant. You can't get pregnant whenever you want to if you're an American icon. The only person who I know who's been able to do whatever they want to whenever is Beyonce. Okay?
So, Lee, I went back and I really wasn't following the situation with Simone Biles. But after you and I talked, I did try to get into it a little bit more to see what was going on, because what I was hearing didn't really make sense. And to be quite frank, what I hear a lot of people do is make excuses for her that I thought was not beneficial. But what she said out of her own mouth, which I didn't know at the time, which now makes sense to me, is she has a prescription for, I think it's ADHD. And she had made a comment about getting the twisties. And I was like, the twisties? What the heck are the twisties? And with this prescription that she has been taking for 10 years that she has not hidden, that the medical teams knew about, that is what has came into question. And she was not allowed to take those prescribed medications that she's been prescribed for 10 years. And that is where we get into the mental issues that she was initially talking about. Now, I don't know about all of that other stuff about her being pregnant. I think that's just kind of out there. But what she said out of her own mouth, and I don't even know if that's germane to the conversation, actually. That's kind of odd to me. But what came out of her own mouth was that she takes medication. They said she cannot take the medication. That impacts her focus and concentration and other things, and that's what was throwing her off. Well, right. To me, what that sounds like going back to your original point, is maybe because she was doing all of those things and she was raising the bar so high, I could see them, as you said, trying to throw something out there to shut her down or to prevent her from continuing her success. But her mental health came down to them changing the rules, as they often do on black people, wherever we are and whatever endeavors that we have, especially when we are exceeding or far exceeding the rest of the people, and specifically white people. That I can support 100% and do support 100%.
Well, she was saying that she was having difficulty telling the difference between up and down. So, you know, I was like, what the hell is that all about? You know what I'm saying? That's some loopiness, but hey, man, now that you give me that piece too, because I hadn't heard that piece, that's what's up.
I mean, they told us that back in the day, though. This is what I'm telling you. They did an expose on her when she first broke gold. And her parents was like, you know, she was a particularly hard foster child because they took her to the hospital 4 or 5 times for jumping off of shit. And that it was finally somebody told them, just put her somewhere where she's supposed to be jumping off of stuff. And that at least, you know, let her get that out and then, medicate her for the rest. And so when nobody was hearing that.
Okay. Well, hey, man, like I said, going back to the beginning, you know, I wish her the best no matter what, you know, because I think she's an exceptional athlete and a young lady. You know, she has definitely handled her business well. She's not gotten in the muckety muck of the muck. She has been a great representative of the country and of us as a people. So I wish her nothing more than the best, to be real. You know what I'm saying? And that be about the size of that. But, you know, we have limited amount of time left in the show. So I wanted to go to the coronavirus, a.k.a. Trump virus, as well, because this Delta variant is the variant that we're all talking about right now. But there's another variant on its heels that's developing as well. And we started off the show riding, I apologize you weren't on, talking about it to a degree, but you know, we're in this situation because folks won't listen. We're in this situation because enough folks have not gotten vaccinated. We're in this situation because the former president and his league of cronies made folks pause and not believe in the severity of this infection. However, now, yet again, we're right back to where we were pretty much almost a year and a half ago, where folks are dropping, rates are rising faster than they can be taken care of in hospitals. Rodney, do you ever see us going back to the air quote, unquote, norm?
No, and nor should we go back to the norm, because the norm is what has led us to where we are today. So we have to advance ourselves past that. So going backwards is no longer, nor should it be, an option. But I will say this about these are all things that we talked about on this show. As a matter of fact, we predicted that this was going to happen on this show because of the way that the government prior to this administration getting in office handled it. And it's really a situation of the chickens coming home to roost. In other words, we had these divisions in this country, and usually most of the issues of this country can be traced back to racism, and this is no different. And because of that racial divide and the former chief executive using that to create a wedge in this country, now we have people and an organized effort to stop people from wearing masks that will save people's lives, to keep people mm-hmm. from getting vaccinated. I was at a we had a commissioner's meeting, community meeting, just Wednesday, I believe it was Wednesday night, and organized protesters, sycophants from X45, some of his cultist members came in, disrupted the meeting on how to spend the money coming into this commission district, that they wanted to talk about masks and how masks, they said the masks were what was killing people, not the virus. It's the mask.
Man, I've heard that.
See that
so
type
much
of information?
Lately.
Bovine they said that it was the people taking the vaccination that were dying, not the people who weren't vaccinated. They even said that the people who are not vaccinated the government needs to do something to protect them from the people who are vaccinated. This type of lunacy can go also back to our education system, but that's what we're dealing with right here in Las Vegas, Nevada, and in Nevada, which has some of the highest infection rates in the country, because we have so many people who refuse to take the vaccines. And I do understand vaccine hesitancy. Now, that one, there can be some rationale behind it, and I think you need to meet people where they are and explain it to them, and those who have ears to hear will understand it, right? But the people who won't mask up and disrupt things because of masks and spread that disinformation that the masks are killing people. I like, apparently they've never been in the military because we wore masks a whole lot, right? We're seeing people are dying, and they're dying needlessly, and more of them are going to die. And Lee, we talked on the show, and I said that when we start getting multiple variants at the same time, and even worse, when we get multiple.
Rodney fell off on me. But, Rashi?
I'm telling you, his minutes run out every show at exactly a quarter.
I don't know if
is the plan rebooting itself every Saturday, yeah. Mr. Rodney? Like, I can't
maybe
stand
we gotta put
the
Rodney
cellular
back.
For that. If I didn't know better, I'd say that was a plan. From
he got
anyway,
he got an Obama
thing.
Call.
I have finally I'm out here looking for a storage. I'm going to call out early. I'm going to tell you that I appreciate our time, and I'm going to try to stop from being another homeless person walking the street. Until next
week,
brother.
What you do then? All right, peace.
All right.
Brody, yo, like, it's the same time every week. You just fade out. Like, you know, you got an Obama phone. What's going on?
My brother got an iPhone 12 Plus Max. What are you talking about? You need to take that thing back.
I don't know what's going on.
But, you know, there is a problem. And, you know, we had Angela Gita, the Senate candidate from South Carolina, talking about broadband access. In the area where I live at, which, you know, it's not that old, they were laying fiber. But for some reason, they didn't lay fiber for the entire development, which makes zero sense to me. And when I first moved out here, I couldn't get cell phone reception at all, nor internet. And it's improved, but it's, you know, it's still not great because of just, I live on the outskirts of the city. So it's actually not the phone, it's just the service that's here. But no, right. I was just saying that through a lot of the not just misinformation, because that's bad enough, but disinformation. You have vaccine hesitancy, but you also have people simply not willing to mask up. And I think that the president made a boss move. He did a power move when he ordered federal agencies to mask up and to people that work there to get, you know, strongly pushed them to get vaccinated. And our governor here has masked up. And when those people burst into the commissioner's meeting, these are white people. These were people who burst into the school board meeting, disrupting the school board meeting, talking about masks are going to kill the children. You know, freedom of speech has its limits. And when you start spreading disinformation that is harmful, we are taking it too easy on these people because lives are at stake and lives are being lost unnecessarily. So I really appreciate what the president did as well as what our governor has done.
Well, as you said, we wore masks quite often in the military, so it's nothing new to us. And, you know, it's the right thing to do, not only as a precautionary measure for yourself, but for other people as well. I mean, it's been noted that you can still contract the virus even though you are, even though you've gotten the vaccine against it, and you can pass it forward. So, yeah, man, it's just, this is an easy one, folks. This is a greater good situation. Like, how harmful is it to you? How much of a headache is it to you to just wear the damn mask? And that's what it all really boils down to. Just put the damn thing on. You know, there's no harm, no foul. We will get back to the norm sooner rather than later if we mask up. Mask up, socially distance, wash your hands, taking it back to, again, where we were about a year and a half ago. But unfortunately, because enough people didn't do the right thing, and they didn't, enough people didn't do the right thing, then we all have to suffer. And that's what it boils down to. Enough people did not do the right thing, so now we all have to suffer. Because as soon as the mask mandates were lifted, you had some of these non-vaxxers out here who weren't wearing a mask before, but they were free-willing it, really, after that. You know what I'm saying? And that just caused this whole chain reaction with these variants coming up, coming out, being even more aggressive than the original strains. Because what are they trying to do? They're trying to survive. They are trying to survive. And they will do whatever they can do in order to survive. So that's what's up.
You know, Lee, and that part right there is where I was telling somebody, I said, this is like when we're in, you know, this is the worst case. And I said, now we're in the worst case. And I said, be careful because we might move into the worst case. And then yesterday I said, oh, shucks. With this new strain and these new strains coming out, I said we may just have went into the worst case. And that worst case is when we start having breakout infections in people who have been vaccinated because viruses, the nature of it, as you mentioned, to survive, and because this is a very smart RNA virus, is that the mutation from a vaccinated person might be different from the mutation in a unvaccinated person, because in the unvaccinated person, the virus doesn't have to overcome antibodies, right? But in the vaccinated person, that strain that infects that person is obviously stronger because it infected a vaccinated person, right? Also, if it survives, and let's say it mutates off of that vaccinated person that has the antibody, that mutation could be the mutation that now makes the efficacy of the vaccine nowhere near what it was that prevented so many infections. So where we are today, this point where we are today with the Delta variant, Lambda right on its heels, and who knows what else is coming, is if we don't get a hold of this soon, and we do get a variant or strain that is resistant to the vaccine, That means all of the money, all of the work, the sacrifice that people took to get vaccinated will mean almost nothing because the vaccine will no longer have the efficacy against whatever this new virus that will come to be. That is the absolute worst scenario. And I'm hoping and praying that that does not happen and that enough people will start getting vaccinated to prevent it from happening.
Well, you know, it's I understand some people's hesitations and, you know, they, well, I don't want to be the first in line, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I can dig it all the way through and true and all that jazz, but at this point, get your ass in line. Like, get in line. You aren't the first. You're not going to be the last. Get in line. Don't be one of those jokers whom, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but let me back that off then. Let's not be one of those individuals whom now is about to go on the respirator and saying, I should have, or can I get, it's too late now. You can't get the vaccine now. Now it will have no effectiveness. You're going to have to wait until you recover, and then after you recover, a couple of weeks after such, and then you can get the vaccine. But yeah, man, don't be that guy. Don't be that gal. Don't think of your children. Think of your children's children. You know, we've seen enough body bags. We had Margaret on. She talked about her business and how it was booming, and that's not a good thing. You know, there was a wait to bury people. Don't be that person just because you don't want to wear a daggone mask. Don't be that person just because you didn't wash your bag. You know, take care of yourself. Take care of your family. And that's all I have for this week, to be honest with you, Rodney. You got anything you want to close out on? Anything happening?
No, I think that you hit it well with, because that is the two biggest threats to this country and to us as people right now is this virus and the various iterations of it, and the cult of Trumpism. And they're both working together to damage this country and to kill us. And both of them need aggressive action to prevent them from killing us and destroying this country.
Speaking of, his tax records are going to go to Congress. There's nothing at this point that he can do. His tax records will go to Congress. So if he tries to fight it in court, man, it ain't going to work. It's not going to stand up. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say I knew that was going to happen because the law is pretty clear on the presidential tax record. It was just a matter of working its way through the court. But I do want to leave people with this. And Lee talked about the masking up and the vaccination, and I said there was two things. There is an organized effort to disrupt the flow of politics and governance that is happening from these same people. And what I'm going to say to you is don't let what happened to us this week happen to you. And so be prepared for these disruptors and protesters preventing government from working by storming meetings, intimidating and threatening participants. We're having a meeting here on how we can organize and prevent that from happening again. The threats that go out to our sisters that oftentimes are on the front line, as well as others, that is real. And it is a real and present danger today, and it's happening here. I know it's happening in other places, and it's probably coming to some place where those of you out there are listening. So please take this seriously, and just like you mask up and get vaccinated to protect yourself personally from the virus, you need to prepare for these disruptors to interfere with the flow of governance, which also impacts our lives.
All right, y'all. Look, we love y'all. Thanks for listening live. Thanks for listening later. Until next week, we out.